Do you like wrestling trivia? Then check out the 5-Star Match Game, the pro wrestling quiz show. I'm Joe Gagne, and every episode, I grill 3 contestants with 5 rounds of power-packed wrestling trivia. We have over 30 evergreen episodes in the archives covering WWE, AEW, Japan, Mexico, and much, 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 much more. Play along at home and check it out today.
Hey kids, just a reminder, if you like what we do here at Shake Them Ropes, click on that link in the description, the red circle, and click the tip jar and throw us a buck or two, because we ain't doing live reads anymore, and we ain't volunteers. If you don't like what we do here, forget I said anything. Now, Shake Them Ropes, which you don't like what we do here, which is weird.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Kids, do you like professional wrestling? Well, we like professional wrestling too. This is Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrino. I am freshly, well, kind of a few days back from Vegas, broke even. Saw Maroon 5, Chris. Are you a fan of Maroon 5?
I cannot say that I am.
They're actually not bad musically. They got a pretty good horn section. They have more radio hits than I remembered them having. Went to see their residency at the hotel I was staying at. Went for Double or Nothing. Live report later. Cliff Notes. Had fun, but it was very, very long. Broke even on the gambling. Always nice. Accidentally hopped the hard ways and hit a 30-1 with $10 on it. I'm like, okay, broke even. Leaving for the day. But yeah, we got a lot of news to cover. We got a few pay-per-views to cover. Let's get to it. Top story, Janelle Grant paused her lawsuit by request of the Department of Justice, who filed a couple of confidential documents in the old docket and said, due to a non-public investigation, could you please stop with the civil suit regarding the NDAs? Now, look, this could be a million things. This could possibly even not be about Vince McMahon, but rather about the Trump Foundation and the connection to the McMahons, et cetera, et cetera. If I were to take a guess, I think they don't want any judgments within the civil suit to possibly affect a criminal investigation, such as, yes, these NDAs are legally binding or whatever like that. I'm going to take the Occam's razor version, but I'm also going to tell you, I have no idea what this is. Chris, do you have any thoughts?
So if she drops the case right now, what
she's
McMahon
paused it. She's paused it,
right, paused it. What McMahon can't get is a ruling on the legal standing of the NDAs.
Correct.
I mean, that's gotta be what's going on.
That's here. What I'm thinking as well. I mean, they do these for a number of reasons. It could be just, hey, we don't want you mucking up our discovery right now with the civil suit. You know, we want, you know, right of,
well, I mean, I think even maybe they even think the DOJ might even think that they could beat the NDAs later on.
Yes,
but why do that if you don't, if Grant can pause the lawsuit right now, they can get past that anyways.
Yeah, and to my thinking is, if they are building a case, although a federal case for sexual assault would be would not happen on this level, but this is the Southern District of New York who filed this.
I mean, that could get spun off though, right?
That could get spun off, but the feds wouldn't be asking this for a sexual assault lawsuit.
No, but they could find things,
yes,
pertinent to that, and then spin,
yes,
that off into,
yes,
another case.
And
that's the thing that Vince has to be very worried about with this, is that if the feds are coming in, if the DOJ is coming in here, more than just this, but that broader scope is going to result in them discovering other things that they're going to want to spin off into other sub brackets, I would suspect.
I'm going to go with something to do with money. the answer to all your questions is usually money. That's what I always like to say. So I'm going to say, you know, using corporate funds for personal use or something to that effect. You know, I don't know. But
we actually know that that's kind of been part of the problem here is that he was using. So that's certainly out there. And then if let's say the DOJ is looking into the hush money funds, right? Because what was the number? What was it, 20 million? It was the hush money approximate slush fund that he was doing.
Yes, I believe so. It might have even been 200 million.
Yeah, it was a minute ago since we did that story, but we know that that exists. So McMahon, and that he was doing that with the company. So the DOJ would look into that. And then the DOJ would also look into who were these hush money payments for, and then what was kind of the extant surrounding fact set around those hush money payments. That would be just part of a standard investigation, and that's the type of shit that could absolutely get spun off on Vince. And then that might end up helping the Grant lawsuit too later on.
Report coming out earlier from Puck's Matt Baloney. I'm told the exclusive window, this is involving AEW and the bidding with Warner Brothers Discovery. Quote, I'm told the exclusive window closes in July, and AEW leader Tony Khan is said to be disappointed with the offer currently on the table. Khan also surely knows that Zaslav losing the NBA would give AEW more leverage, even though the money to re-up AEW is a mere drop in the NBA bucket. If the window closes without a deal, others could swoop in for those rights as Comcast has done with the NBA. In parentheses, extra awkward because WBD is said to own a stake in the league. Quote, I'm not sure how alluring AEW would be to another platform, especially since only non-WWE partners could bid. But the wrestling shows still do okay on the Turner networks, it's reliable programming, and a rival suitor could further push Zaslav into hot water in his cable carriage deals. Now, when this came out, Chris, I focused on the term, if the window closes without a deal, others could swoop in for those rights. And immediately, my thinking was, someone from AEW PR leaked this to Puck's Matt Baloney.
Yep.
Swoop really got me going on that one because it's like, ooh, this is a hot product and you don't want to lose it right now, David Zaslav.
And nobody else is saying that but the in-house of AEW right now.
Now, the thinking here is that there are other lower, look, the big players in carriage fees right now, I believe, are WBD's big. ESPN is, of course, the granddaddy of them all. I think they get something like $250 each subscriber or something like that. Comcast, with its army of networks, including USA, Bravo, etc., and Time Warner, for the most part. MTV used to be on that list. I mean, I think MTV is now morphed into, they're part of one of these other bigger things. Maybe even Comcast. I can't remember, quite frankly. But there are a bunch of backbencher networks who would love to get these types of numbers, et cetera, but they don't get the carriage deal. So, I mean, your big suitors, and Fox is another one because they have FS1, FS2, and FX. But Fox has already gotten out of the wrestling business on network TV. Now, maybe they'd want that for their FS1, which gets great numbers whenever WWE's on it, but nobody watches it otherwise. You know, we had the deal with TNA just going, you know, from Spike to, or what was formerly known as Spike to, you know, the TV Guide Network to now Access Television, which is mostly...
It is crazy that the TV Guide Network didn't do better as a channel. It seems like they would have had that just kind of masterfully studied.
Well, I mean, the time of DVRs versus just scrolling, watching a scroll of channels, it died a death due to the DVR. All you had to, nobody's watching live. They could just set up everything to record and leave.
And TV Guy didn't see it coming either.
No.
I know.
I am still of the opinion that Zaslav, if they lose the NBA, which seems to be what the prevailing rumor here is, or at least loses a significant chunk of the NBA, I think they just rebrand the channel again. They've done this before. They did it when AOL Time Warner bought it and didn't want wrestling on it. Zaslav could literally run Star Wars and comic book movies and The Big Bang Theory and reruns on both his networks and get a sizable portion. He'll have the NHL for live ratings and stuff like that. It's one of those things where I know Tony Khan wants a streaming deal within this. That's what he was told, and for the pay-per-view. So he really wants WBD to pay up. But man, there's that part of me nagging at me that Zaslav comes in and goes, you know what? We're going to take this off our Tiffany networks and put, you can have as much real estate as you want on True TV and go over there with the Impractical Jokers and our other lowbrow stuff that we're doing. I mean, don't get me wrong. True TV does big numbers at times.
I mean, I think Tony Khan's really overplaying his hand because that seems to be a very likely fate for this show to suffer, is that they get moved down into the crappier neighborhood in the television atmosphere. I very much could see Dynamite ending up on a True TV, especially when you're looking at the year-over-year numbers going down. They don't have an amazing case.
No, and what's also interesting is people are talking, because contract talk coming up right now. Becky Lynch's deal is set to expire late this week. She is expected to take some time off. there was chatter within the your wrestling message boards about would Tony Khan want to overpay for Becky Lynch to come in, because I'm like, are you? There's nothing that AEW or that Becky Lynch could want from AEW that's to her interest. Because I'm gonna say this: what Becky Lynch really wants right now is to main event WrestleMania, and not just night one. She wants to be the focal point story in a one-on-one match at WrestleMania. That's her dream. She doesn't want to have bangers like, say, Bayley. She doesn't want to be the biggest star in the world. And Mercedes wants to prove to others that, you know, that's what she can do and carry a company. Becky Lynch already knows she can carry a company. She wants the Seth money, so to speak. I mean, everybody's like, well, you can overpay her. It's like, money, I don't think is really, I mean, between her and Seth.
She wants a big stage.
She wants the stage, yes.
Yeah, the check is important, but the check is not enough. She wants a stage.
Yes, and that is my, and
Tony,
like,
Tony can't offer that to her.
Tony can't offer that. He could offer Wembley, but what's going to happen then is you sign Becky Lynch. Number one, you tick off Mercedes. She's not going to be happy about what she's doing over here. I mean, it's not that they're not friends. It's that
she denies Mercedes her
interest. Number two, you have to push her, and the network who gets AEW would be a fool to not look at them and go, she is a bigger star than all these big free agent signings you just had, including Okada, including Will Ospreay. You need to push her as the face of this company. And that's going to tick off the tribalists, the people who don't necessarily like women's wrestling. A large portion of your fan base is going to be pissed if it's because they want to do it on their own. That they're so.
I'm kind of here for that, just for the socio-political infighting of people going like, I don't like this, but not for that reason, for a different reason.
And just like CM Punk all over again. No,
yeah, people fighting over what the right reason to not like the situation is. Yeah, I actually am kind of here for that.
You and I are Team Chaos, so I mean, it's
yeah. I root for the nerds to give themselves swirlies.
Yeah. Also expiring next week, Chad Gable, and according to what I've read around. The people who know that TKO isn't picking up their contract knows that they're not getting picked up. I would probably include Donovan Dijak in that camp, since he was just brought up to the main roster, but his deal's ending soon. I made this to you pre-show, but I could make the case that TKO looks at Chad Gable, says he's 38, not going to be a main eventer. Let's cut bait here. And that this angle where he's attacking Otis and you're seeing a quote-unquote breakup of Alpha Academy and expecting him to be part of like a new heel stable with, say, the Diamond Mine, that this is really a swan song and he's going out on a shield after Otis turns on him.
I mean, I think they have written this storyline with the multiple outs sort of method here, right?
You could
multi-out this where Otis stands his ground, sides with Sammy, has Maxine, blah, blah, blah. You could have this culminate in, you know, Chad Gable breaking Otis by basically breaking Maxine. There's a number of different ways that this is being written. So I think they certainly have written this with the outdoor of Otis just turns on Gable and then Gable's gone. But I think that would be a weak finish to this storyline. And I certainly still think there's a lot of tread left on Chad Gable's tires. But maybe that's because I'm 38 here in like 11 days.
Happy birthday. AEW also trimming some fat. Arn Anderson done with the company at the end of this month. Cody's kind of been barking over there that he'd like a manager. And look, Arn has a connection with Paul Heyman as well, given their history in WCW. I could see that possibly happening because Triple H does respect Arn Anderson. Also done with AEW, Mark Henry, he of the It's Time, that's enough talking, it's time for the main event.
Hard-hitting journalist, Mark Henry.
Get paid.
The master of the follow-up question.
Dude, I mean, stealing money.
This guy, when he would do these interviews, someone would say something and he'd be studying what they had just said and use that as the inflection point for whatever the follow-up question was. And there's so many of them I can't even mention my favorite Mark Henry moment on interviewing. But I will say enough talking. It's time for the main event.
I think it might be I think he had an interview with like Orange Cassidy where Orange Cassidy just didn't say anything. It's just Mark just moves on. We've heard enough. It's time. And also a guy who I thought may have over-delivered given his expectations in AEW, Jake Hager, the former Jack Swagger, done with AEW when his contract is up, I believe, on May 31st.
Well, I mean, I think he over-delivered given that he was basically given a bucket hat as his material.
I really liked the MMA match with Wardlow.
That was good.
You know, he's a hoss. And he has some personality. He has jock personality. I mean, he's not overflowing with charisma, but he was a great heavy for Jericho. And, you know, he's good as a heavy. I don't want him as a single star, but he's good as a heavy. And you know what? He got paid. So, I mean, I can't see him back with WWE unless it's like a one-shot deal in any way. I could see TNA picking him up for a short stint. But
You say that, but I could see him in NXT as like a trainee guy,
as like an Oba, as like a foil to Oba Femi.
Even Sean Spears heavy
or Trick Williams,
right?
I mean, he's the big guy who they want somebody who they see something in to beat.
Right.
I could see that. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Sean Spears managing Jake Hager actually seems very plausible to me.
And then Ethan Page to NXT, him debuting on Tuesday, and it looks like from TNA through the other forbidden door, Jordynne Grace versus Roxanne Perez at Battleground was announced. I think these are savvy moves.
I think so, too. Multiple reasons. One, I feel the more I watch Trick Williams wrestle, the more and more you see the limitations of Trick Williams. And it is going to be very important for this title reign in order for it to go smoothly and hopefully evolve Trick Williams into a better wrestler, that he works with really quality, steady hands who can guide a match. And All Ego Ethan Page is certainly that. I loved the way that they debuted all ego Ethan Page. They had this Gallus is attacking people angle, which is consistent kind of what we've known for Gallus, that they do like to beat people up. They've always done that. They were beating people up. They re-debuted, and then the beatings continued. And
morale Gallus, improved. Sorry, that's a joke.
And it was a very plausible inside of the universe for all of the wrestlers, and also for us as the viewer, narrative to believe that Gallus was now is trying to set the table for Joe Coffey, presumably to get a title match against Trick Williams. So they're taking out Noam Dar, and they're taking out Trick Williams' buddy, and they had motive and opportunity to actually be doing this, and means. So, like, means, motive, and opportunity all tracked with Gallus. And then when we reveal all ego Ethan Page, it still makes sense in reverse why Gallus wouldn't have gone after those guys, or maybe didn't go. Like, Noam Dar was always kind of a weird one, but you kind of just went with it. It was like, well, Joe Coffey has his reasons. But then, you know, once we see that it's all ego Ethan Page, it makes sense why he was going after Trick Williams' buddies, obviously. And it makes sense why he went after Noam Dar. He doesn't care about anyone but himself because he's all ego Ethan Page and he wants the title. I thought this was a very clever debut. And I'm not going to sit here and be like everything that they're writing on NXT right now is super brilliant. Charlie Dempsey saying capiche hurt my soul.
Let's save that for Lazy River.
but I will say that this was a very good piece of business, I thought. Yes. And it gets all ego Ethan Page immediately into the main event mix, which is where he should be.
I think Jordan Grace coming to NXT Battleground off the Rumble appearance. I mean, yeah, it's been a few months. I could see her beating Roxanne Perez and Roxanne going up to the main roster. I also think some of the young kids and even some of the guys who are fairly polished going to TNA would be interesting. There are some fascinating matches that I would love if we can agree that certain people can lose. Like, I would love a Mike Bailey versus Nathan Frazier or Axiom match. I would love Josh Alexander having a grappling fight with somebody. TNA has a lot of really good talent on that roster. They got the Nemus. You can always use Ziggler back and forth. You could reunite Wes Lee and the Rascals for one night only. That would be fascinating to me. If there's a working relationship here, I get the cynicism. I know there are people screaming right now, nobody ever looks good by working with WWE. I get it. On potential, though, it's not Vince's company anymore. I know that WWE is still going to want to protect their talent as superior. That's not going to be a surprising thing if that happens. I'm just saying you could also send some of these green as grass people over to NXT and have them, or over to TNA and have them lose.
The level up crew could absolutely go over there and eat some pinfalls on TNA,
but get some experience with people.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Right.
I'm kind of here for that. Injury report, the big one. Adam Copeland has announced he has fractured his tibia off of the dive off the cage and will require surgery. Chris, I was there live for this. We're all watching this. He wraps Malakai Black in barbed wire and he starts climbing. And I'm assuming, okay, he's tied him down. He's going to do a splash, but why would you splash after tying a guy down with barbed wire? Nope. Straight down with an elbow, but landing on his feet so that he could land his elbow somewhere safe. But man, that's a high way up. I mean, it was high even up close, and you're just like, he's 50. And those rings don't have give. I don't know if you've ever seen. Have you seen the leg drop by Bull Nakano off the top of the cage that she did that one time?
Oh man, no.
Yes. I mean, you see these. I think Bobby Eaton's done that a couple times. I mean, these rings, don't get me wrong, they have some bounce to them, but there's still plywood under there. And the laws of physics still expound. And this really has thrown a wrench into some of the future plans of AEW. But I just thought this was a dumb move for this. And look,
it was a really stupid. I mean, like watching it, you know, I watched this a few days later. Watching this, it was a dumb. The elbow drop off of the top of the cage, optics wise, even like Edge is not like a Macho Man Randy Savage guy, but like even Macho Man wouldn't have been able to do it off the top rope or off the top of the cage and make it look the way it did off the top rope, because off the top rope, there's enough air to get into position and make it look killer, but not so much air that it kills you.
You'd have to crush the guy on that. And also you're dealing with the wild card of the barbed wire.
Right. Right. No, it was a very dumb spot. That would have been a dumb spot for a man in his mid-20s to be considering.
Yes,
and it was idiotic for a man at 50 to be considering. Chris.
We won't put on bangers and stuff.
It was a very...
I'm sad. I'm actually sad about this, because Copeland should be the new Sting. And I get that Sting's going to do this crazy stuff, but Sting has four people catching him when he does a dive. I mean, it's not a one-on-one thing.
That was what came out of my, why? Why did we do that?
My first thought was he blew out his knee. I thought for sure, instead he broke his leg, which is maybe a little bit better, but not by much. You know, I thought he had blown out his ACL. And those take 9 months. This will take, what, six to eight, I think?
Yeah, yeah.
Ratings this week are interesting. Look, Raw had a good week. SmackDown was a little bit down. But the interesting one, again, it's Dynamite versus NXT. Dynamite, 787,000 with a 0.25 in the demo. NXT, 703,000 and 0.24 in the demo. We talked about this a little bit before, and this will lead us eventually into the lazy river, but NXT is doing interesting things. They are hip to the culture. I hate their presentation. I hate the brightness. I hate Full Sail. Sexy Red, pull the number here.
I can't deny that.
Caucasian old men, Chris. Let's tread lightly.
No. I am a professional musician who teaches large, wide swaths of music across all genres and teaches music history, which includes being abreast on modern music. I like and dislike music from all decades. Sexy Red is bad music from this decade. Not unlike, trying to think of like a bad...
Chris, Maroon 5 versus Sexy Red. You're locked in a room and have to listen to one.
I am strangling. I'm drinking Maroon 5 and hoping that it's poisonous so that I don't have to listen to...
Really?
Why not?
Yeah. Oh, you're being dramatic.
I was going to make a joke about Maroon and Red, but you stepped all over my dick on this one, Hawkins. So you know what? I'm moving the hell on. Thank you.
Maroon and Red. Nobody's going to get that, Chris.
That was really fucking, really sophisticated shit. Really, really sophisticated.
I know I've ticked off Chris because he started swearing, and I know that I don't want swearing on this show, and he knows that too. So we will move on because I accidentally stepped on Chris's joke. To the lazy river of wrestling criticism, whatever we watched, whatever we had time for, a couple of pay-per-views, King and Queen of the Ring and Double or Nothing. Were you able to watch either of those, Chris?
Just a little bit of Double or Nothing. I figured I was going to get everything I needed to know on Raw, and between, you know, we have wrestling every night, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
Yes.
Yeah. It's just, I know I'm going to get what I need to know on Raw and the follow-up Dynamite. And so unless I hear from people, got to go watch King and Queen of the Ring, which I didn't. And from the AEW side, my friends who like AEW were telling me that the show was too long. So I knew that I was going to find it to be arduous. Like, okay. If my friends who like it a lot tell me that they found it to be long in the tooth, I know that I will. So I watched a bit of the Anarchy in the Arena. I think Anarchy in the Arena is sort of the quintessential AEW match. That for all of the talk about the best wrestling and the five-star matches and all of that other stuff, that actually AEW essentialized is this thing with the crazy high spots, like the over the top, like I want to light myself on fire moments, and we need to have the fire extinguishers, and we need to hog tie Darby Allin and flog him. That to me, in a way, is what this company seems to be the most comfortable with. They're not, for all the love of the work rate, they're not the big feel main event company. They don't do that very well. They do this well. This is their thing. And if you like this thing, then this thing is for you. But if you are someone who wants a world champion to be presented as the focus of the pay-per-view and as the narrative through line, this was true with MJF, and it's just as true now with Swerve Strickland. This ain't your company. They don't know how to deliver that feel. Maybe they've done it on a couple of isolated moments, but every time out, hell no. They are way more likely to strike out on that than they are to actually bop it out of the park.
I agree with that, and I want to table this because it's going to go into my longer opinion between Double or Nothing and Dynamite. But you are spot on for them. Their specialty is, oh my God, this is a dream match. And the music makes Anarchy in the Arena. Don't get me wrong, the music cues were a bit jokey this time, but playing the final countdown like two or three times, it was pretty fantastic. Now it's time to get the rights to Natural Born Killers. But yes, I thoroughly enjoyed Anarchy in the Arena. I will talk about Double or Nothing. I'll get through King of the Ring fairly quickly.
Yeah, in case it wasn't clear, I thought Anarchy in the Arena was really entertaining for that type of match.
It also went long.
It was also long as hell. That's the meta problem.
I think you're right. I think you're correct.
They don't know how to edit. They don't know how to edit themselves. They don't know how to edit their own card. Was there like 13 matches on that show?
Including the pre-show, I believe you are correct on that. And yes, the jam band AEW we talked about is back. And we could have cut things like Trent and Orange Cassidy and save that for television. Going to go into a few of my bigger problems with AEW and their formatting in a second. Let me just run real quickly through this. Logan Paul again over-delivered in a match. I thought, again, against Cody. Wasn't going to win. Pure spectacle, decent enough. I liked it. I liked the main event.
He never shrivels in the big light.
No.
You know what I mean? No, he always is rising to the occasion of the big stage. The spotlight never feels too big for him.
He's fearless. He's an insane maniac. He's a huge jerk, which makes him being a heel so great. And Cody played off all of those things. And Cody made him look good. And look, it wasn't a five-star match, probably not. But it was a damn entertaining main event for that pay-per-view. Where the other real highlight was, of course, Gunther versus Randy Orton. And of course, there was a bit of a issue with the shoulder being up, but you know, they're giving the winners of King and Queen of the Ring title shots. I think that's a positive thing. Stole a little bit of AEW's thunder with the Owen tournament, doing the same at All In or All Out, whichever one's at Wembley. Nia Jax pretty good foil for Bayley, but we've seen it before, which is going to be interesting. Match didn't do anything, didn't do much. Gunther Orton was what you'd expect, I think. Old man Orton is kind of cool in his slowing down of things. Lyra tried. She was doing David and Goliath won. She can take the loss. It's fine. Becky and Liv. It was okay. Liv's a great character until the bell rings, I think.
Yeah, no, she needs work still in the, like, it's, Liv is the female equivalent of Drew McIntyre before the bell rings.
Yes.
The character development has been A-grade stuff. They've came up with a very cohesive and logical year-long arc for why she's doing all of this stuff. It's compelling and interesting. She's motivated. Like, it's good stuff. And then she starts wrestling, and she was a product of developmental when developmental really didn't know what they wanted to develop female wrestlers into. And it feels like Liv still is trying to figure out what the Liv Morgan wrestling style is supposed to be.
Yeah. I love Becky's outfit. I know people gave crap about the Peaky Blinders thing, but looked good in a black pantsuit for me. and then Sami Zayn is king of the mid-card in WWE. He's still so compelling. And defeating Chad and Bronson Reed, you know, this was the story match. We knew Otis was going to, you know, eventually find a way in there, et cetera. I'm not going to the pre-match. No, Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill won. It was fine. Candace bumped like a mad woman for him, and Indy Hartwell was competent. So, I mean, this was a sit down watch. Don't watch the pre-show because I think the pre-show was like 90 minutes of just meh. And then you watch a 2-hour show and you can leave. Contrast that with Double or Nothing. I went, it was fun, but live between the Ospreay match and the MJF promo, get to that in a moment, and the triple main event, it felt dead to me. Now, that doesn't mean that the wrestling wasn't good, and occasionally they'd get some audience interaction and stuff like that. But Roddy and Will Ospreay had a banger match in the open. And they do the Adam Cole thing. Adam Cole, story time, baby. You know, they cut, MJF is there. MJF cuts a killer promo up until.
What's going on, guys? This is Rich, co-host of the Flagship Podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network. We'll get right back to your show. Just want a brief moment to tell you about a sponsor that we have here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network, Arena Club. Now, Arena Club, man, they're great for card collectors. If you're a card collector out there, this is the read for you. And in this hobby, I know it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up. We think, oh man, here's the 86 Michael Jordan Fleer rookie card. It's going to be in this pack. It never is. It's never in that pack. And usually you don't have zero. You have zero transparency on available cards and hit rates. It's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com. The only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each and every one. And when I buy slab packs from Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. And I've talked about before, I go to card shows, I grab random packs, I have fun opening them, but I know there's nothing good ever in there. There never is. There's never going to. Why? That's why they're available to buy, because there's nothing good in there. That's not the case anymore with Arena Club slab packs. They're better than those mystery packs because they have a display of available cards. They have a display of the hit rates. They have a display of the grading. You know exactly what you're getting. It's transparent. And Arena Club, more than that, they're an awesome place for collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying. If you're a card collector, you get it all at Arena Club. Now, Arena Club slab packs are revolutionizing the repack game, like we said, with full transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed into your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. And the Arena Club grading process is great. It's fast, it's accurate, it's transparent, with a full grade rationale provided, an explanation of how your card was scored. You're not putting this thing in an envelope, send it out to the mail, and then get back a number. Oh, it's a 6.2. Why? It's a, whatever. Too bad. We just said it was 6.2. No, you get all of the rationale, all the explanation of how your cart is scored and how it is graded. And man, Arena Club, whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. But there's even better news here, because right now you can get 10% off your first purchase at Arena Club by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Make sure you use that link to get the 10% off your first purchase. Again, arenaclub.com/VOWnet. That is a crazy offer. That is 10% off of your first purchase of anything. If it's a $400 slab pack, you're getting $40 off immediately just by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Anyways, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase. arenaclub.com/VOWnet, 10% off your first purchase. And we appreciate them for sponsoring the Voice Wrestling Podcast Network. Now, back to your show.
He shows off his AEW tattoo, and that kind of threw me out of it. I just went, "Oh, don't get a tattoo of your employer. I am across the board on this. I don't care how much you love them. It is your job."
If I ever get a tram tattoo.
Oh, come on, Chris.
If I ever get a tram tattoo, you have to stop me.
Oh, the tramp stamp for Chris November.
The tram stamp.
The tram stamp. Yes. Thank you. No, that's what I But boy, MJF, listener of Jeff Hawkins, all about the hate. I hate. I was pumping my fist, Chris. I was ready to do the Joe Lanza pacing thing. And then he showed the tattoo. I went, and I turned it to JBL. I went, "You mark, you geek."
Well, I mean, it is such a stupid thing for him to have gotten tattooed on him unless he's going to be babyface forever. And that's so obviously not where the money is with MJF. Like, this is a guy who throughout his career is going to go between babyface and heel at various stints. And so having the tattoo of the company on him is just, it's dumb.
Well, it's hidden, though. It'll be hidden underneath his boots. He wants to appeal to the crowd. I'm staying. I'm not going anywhere. You know, the Wolf of Wrestling, his new gimmick. Pulling a Jericho and going directly to a movie character for inspiration.
Is it inspiration if you're just doing the movie?
Well, he's also kind of doing Triple H with the jacket and everything. And also a little Stone Cold in there. It's an intrigue. Look, I like MJF. He can talk, and I just want him to be a jerk. And I agreed with him. No more kangaroo kicks. No more of this. I just kind of went, I hope that's a fake tattoo. That's what I'm kind of hoping. But it's also one of those things where they want this to be a wrestling war. He's gonna be a soldier at least for the next 3 to 4 years, because he's apparently has re-signed. And then he'll go and get his money contract to WWE, I guess. I don't know. It's not that he's not making money now, but I
suspect by the end of this contract, this contract will be his last contract with AEW.
I kind of agree. I mean, he'll still be in his 20s. You know, and then
I don't see them utilizing him in this like super savvy way here in this next 4 years.
He is the most fascinating person on the roster in AEW, because he is a, for lack of a better term, and I don't mean this derogatorily in this way, he is a WWE guy in an AEW work rate federation, where the fans really want 5-star bangers. And it's not that MJF can't pull off a 5-star banger. He just needs somebody who can pull off a 5-star banger to be with him to get the 5-star banger.
Yes. He is. I think people understate his competency as a wrestler. He's actually very good. But he'll never be able to, he's not going to be the flippy dudes guy. Like, that's not, nor should he be. And it does sort of seem like his skill set would so obviously shine in a WrestleMania program on the big stage that, you know, going back to what does AEW do well and what do they not do well, I feel like this company doesn't actually do the things well that MJF needs done well.
Willow and Mercedes was a good match, very good match.
Yeah. And then Mercedes really crushed it on that promo. I can't wait to see Willow get back and get her vengeance on them. And good luck to her.
We will get to that in a second. You know, the Swerve Christian was cromulent, but it's like all these matches were... The thing that's bugging me about AEW right now in terms of pay-per-views is that I want just the match on the pay-per-view. We're doing too many angles on pay-per-views where we're beginning feuds on pay-per-views, feeding to TV, and that feels a little WWE from a couple years ago, a little bit WCW to me.
I was going to say, that's WCW 98 to me.
Yes. And
that's deep 98, 99.
And it's a fundamental flaw with the thinking that it's like, well, we're going to start the, or we're going to do angles here. And then on the TV, we're going to do matches. No, I want blow-offs. I don't want beginnings of angles. I want the angles all on television. I want the blow-offs on pay-per-view. I don't want it the other way around. And
yeah, like even a big promo on a pay-per-view, man, it needs to be like a surprise return promo. Like, you know, if Mercedes Moné was a great promo and, you know, she just came back, that's the time you do it. She comes back, she cuts a big promo, and it sort of sets something big in motion right then and there. Okay, sure. But you should not be just having like a let's go backstage to Orange Cassidy and Trent Beretta sort of segment.
Sorry, Trent Beretta as a heel is just no buys in terms of he hasn't switched up his style. He's just wearing a dark suit and growling. But that's an aside. But this goes into a bigger part, especially the Mercedes promo. Before I get to that, let me finish my thought on the pay per view in terms of we had three swerves. If you count the House of Black, the Chris Statlander thing, and who was the other one that teased it was MJF and Adam Cole. We're going to hug it out, kicking the balls. There it is. All of that probably should have happened on three different weeks of television, to be honest with you, after these matches. And it gets to the big story coming out of Double or Nothing is the Elite win the match, and they are firmly in control of AEW. And what did we start Dynamite with? Not even Swerve, not even
this
champion.
This is my critique of this Dynamite, which had a lot of things that were actually pretty decent on it. But boy, starting off with not the vice presidents and Okada and Jack Perry coming out, it was baffling and stupid. And then the way that they actually handled the power struggle on this, one, Tony Khan can't even lose for a week. He has to have Christopher Janos back out there as an avatar, and the four guys have to be like, wah, wah, wee, wah. And they actually had a wonderful opportunity here to make lemonade out of lemons with Adam Copeland breaking his leg, because what they should have done is belt Jack Perry. You give him the belt. You give him the belt, and you guys act like it's totally legitimate, and he goes out and he defends it, and he has nuclear heat as a guy who is holding this belt that he never effing won. And he goes out there holding that belt that he didn't win, that he got handed, and every single title defense, he banana peel finishes. Like that would have been such an obvious heat magnet. And instead, you send out Chris Daniels because Tony Khan can't take an L for a week, and then we pull away the belt from Jack Perry, and then like what? Jack Perry's gonna either one go and compete and win the belt, which will only make him look more legitimate. Oh, wow, that's great booking, guys. Or worse still, he'll lose the tournament and then he doesn't get the belt. And then what did the EVPs do for themselves here? What was the point of this?
On this story, it feels like they're almost vibing with the Chris Daniels learning tree, where they're doing a parody of WWE. But they want you to boo the parody of WWE, and they're not. They're getting, you know, on the learning tree thing. And don't get me wrong, just as an aside, Brian Keith was awesome in that segment. I want him to talk more, and they should have done this when he was a bounty hunter. But I digress. Chris Daniels is now Wish Adam Pearce. It's nothing but authority figure BS crap, and it's like, I think they're doing this to make fun of it, but it's like you're now doing it straight a little bit. And it's like, no, They don't want this. The Mercedes right. promo was a WWE promo. The talk show segments. Mercedes, that segment should have been top of hour two and lead directly into the Sky Blue match. Not you have to watch it later. That's just because nobody cares that Sky Blue was the one who attacked her when every clue they gave on TV was Chris Statlander. None of them. And it's just... It makes Swerve look bad because then Swerve comes out for a 25-minute match or what or 20-minute match or whatever it was with Kill Switch to cut hair when he's your champion and he doesn't feel like a big deal. And now, look, don't get me wrong, that gauntlet match was friggin' awesome. I love who is it? Hechicero and you know they had people from different companies. Which made it kind of cool. Leo Rush returning for that match was awesome. I love me some Leo Rush. And then the surprise of giving it to then Will Ospreay. All right, we're going to go with this. This feels like an angle match where they're going to where you know, Callis and Trent screw Ospreay so that they don't actually have to pin Swerve and they don't actually have to pin Ospreay. And then we can save that match that everybody had rumored for Wembley for later. Because I don't think you go there with a rematch even directly after that.
Yeah.
But boy, the chatter is going to start now about, well, maybe they put Ospreay over Swerve. And maybe this isn't working as much. Because the rating for that quarter, and they're keeping an eye on this, was not good for Killswitch. And wasn't good for Moxley and Rocky Romero because nobody cares about a 20-minute match.
Right. It's like, is that a verdict on Swerve or is that a verdict no. on Romero and Killswitch? And I yes. go like, dude, I don't, there's no one who's gonna make big numbers with Killswitch as their dance partner. That's like not happening. Randy Orton versus Killswitch for 25 minutes is not drawing a big number. It's gonna lose focus.
I am going to now read this. This is a post by Brian Alvarez, probably the king of wrestling audio in my mind. About AEW, and one of the narratives has been comparing AEW to 2019 WWE. AEW today is a billion times better than WWE in 2019. Fact check, true. That's me. With that said, Tony switched the script on yesterday's pay-per-view multiple times during the afternoon. Most people, not just the wrestlers, have no idea what they're doing until the day of the show, and sometimes not until an hour or so before the show. People are flown to towns and given nothing to do. Others are begged the day before the show to please get to the town so they can do something last minute. He knows what he wants to do for pay-per-views, in parentheses, although this often changes, in parentheses. But as far as a week-to-week TV, everything is booked show to show. For most people, he's incredibly difficult to get hold of. In some ways, it legitimately is more like 2019 WWE than it is 2019 AEW, where he was much easier to get a hold of. He had very complex long-term storytelling. Many people had a good idea what they were doing and where things were going, and often most of the following week's entire Dynamite card was booked and announced before the previous week's Dynamite had even ended. In parentheses, remember when Excalibur would run down 24 matches in 30 seconds for the following week? It's night and day, the changes, and people who work for the company in all roles from the wrestlers to the office talk about it in caps all the time. Yes, it is a television show. You need to have your stories and your arcs plotted out from week to week, not just where you're going to get to at the end in the end of 4 weeks on the next pay-per-view, which is very WCW. You need to know how you're going to build, what steps you're going to build on that week, at that time, and then you have to make, and then you can write out the stories, and then if you need to make changes, you can do that. But because Copeland was hurt on this, they had to throw out a whole bunch of television that he had for that night because he was, you know, cramming. Goes to things we've been saying for almost 2 years now in terms of plotting and show running and things like that, and they don't have, they have people with skills and they have people who are trying hard, and I'm not necessarily burying them, but the week-to-week television, number one, he's doing too much. He has 8 hours and ROH that he's trying to do week to week, and he just wants to put on the super indie card banger type match.
And that's also why that's why he keeps filling the time with 20-minute matches too, because he hasn't been writing. So like it's kind of like, oh, we need to go and record our next album. We don't really have songs. What if we did 8-minute versions of the 6 songs we have?
We'll go into the studio and we'll play around for a bit and we'll see if anything comes up.
Yeah, and we'll mix it together and try to make a track out of that thing later.
Let's go to the drummer. Drummer, what would you like to do right now? Well, I'm going to start playing this, and then you start playing with me, and then maybe we can find a song, and then that'll fill 6 minutes. Here we are. It's very much the same thing on creative, and you can see it. People, the jam band thing is back. Okay, we have this 15-minute segment. I need you to fill it. All right, you go to ideas, and it's people writing their own stuff, probably. There's not a firm hand of creative to the directions of what they want and what they want to do each week. It's just, well, what do you want to do? Well, let's do this. Okay, let's try it for a while. It feels that way to me.
You know, you mentioned earlier that you're kind of reading the Christian match, which I did watch some of, was Cromulan. And, like, it's a perfectly Christian match, but you know why Christian's matches sort of stand out in AEW is he seems to be one of the only people in this company who really knows how to edit.
Yes.
And that all of his moves and all of his spots and everything, it actually gets criticism for this, but they all are purposeful. Everything he's doing has a reason for it happening in the match. And in a company where Brian Cage is held up as the gold standard more than Christian Cage, it does stand out a lot.
Chris Lee let Killswitch kick out of Swerve's finisher.
Like, what the hell is that?
What? That's a main event thing only, man.
Right, that's main event only, and Killswitch this should have been a fake out. This should have been a setup for a promo where Killswitch thinks he's going to come out there and have a match against Strickland, and Strickland just like annihilates his knees or something, and then gets him to tap out in about 3.5 minutes, and he cuts a promo and he goes, "I'm done with them. I've finished with all of them. They're all done now.
Whoever wins tonight, I'm coming for you.
Yeah,
something."
Yeah.
Look, you can lead with your champ if you want to make that the big story too. That's great, but give him a great match and make him a great champ. I don't need good wrestling Swerve Strickland. I don't need Swerve with the title. I need a champion on there. I need a hierarchy here. And to me, it doesn't, like, just to go back to the other point, because it's been on my mind and I'm kind of rambling a bit, that yes, this is a lazy river. This is what we do. Do you think Tony Khan could tell me what the plan is for the patriarchy 6 months from now?
Oh, God, he has no. He doesn't even really understand how Swerve Strickland interfaces with this main meta angle that he's got going on with the Bucks and Okada. Like, what's the plan for the Swerve Strickland Okada encounters? What are they going to look like? He has no idea.
The week to week
encounters. Not an idea.
Yes. Does not. I mean, he has his matches on his pay-per-view notebook. Don't get me wrong. But it's like Thursday, he's starting to, I need to brainstorm for Wednesday now. Maybe I'll announce some matches on Collision. Okay, I can add that, and that'll lead to this, and that'll lead. It's very much cramming. You can see he's doing it as he goes, and it's driving me nuts, man.
I mean, the last pay-per-view we were going into, there was the, I forget what angle it was, but they did week 3 and week 4 basically in reverse.
Yes.
Yeah, like, where it's like, well, you should have done that on week 4. What the hell are you doing this on week 3 for? And then, like, week 4.
It was Adam Page and Swerve.
It was Adam Page and Swerve. That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the problem is, by not doing this, this is why this company can't have Drew McIntyre-level characters. If you don't plan out anything, you never get a big payoff like that. Right. You're not going to happenstance your way to character depth.
Dusty and Flair isn't a work rate feud. It is a character feud. It is a feud for the ages, and it is about class struggle. And you got to figure that part out, and you have to have guys who are veterans who can figure that out too. I mean, right now, I look at who his advisors are, and seeing that Arn left, I go, man, that one last connection to the old school, not that they were listening to him ever, is gone. And I think the oldest guy you got out there now is Dean Malenko, who comes from the super indie scene for the most part, and, you know, he was never a territory guy or anything of that effect. And from what I saw in terms of the pay-per-view, the people that were assisting him, I think this was Fightful Select, it was or the Dynamite show. It was Serpentico, QT, and Colt Cabana. And this is no offense to any of them. They some of them are very creative. But, I mean, it's one of those things where the showrunner has to have a strong vision of where every subplot and show is going. And I'm sure Tony is obsessive about wrestling, but I think he needs more people. And look, he's trying with Jen Pepperman. I like Jen Pepperman overall, but she is a system writer, I think. And I think she's a WWE system writer. I think Will Washington probably has some great ideas. I don't know if it's Tony not wanting a committee system or if it's Tony not having strong lieutenants or what it is. He needs a guy who's going to cut fat. He needs an editor in there badly in terms of ideas. He needs a guy who will go to people and go, look, you need to keep your times and you need to not do as much. And you need to, like, okay, once you want to tell your story in 15 minutes, tell me how you're going to do it in 10. You know, that kind of thing. It's frustrating because it's like people go, well, you're just a shill for WWE or whatever. It's like, no, I want this company to work. I want this company to clean up. It's kind of almost, yeah, but it's just wrestling attitude towards wrestling. Because that's what it feels like. It's not that some of the guys don't take it seriously. I know Moxley is just a hardcore wrestling guy, watches his history, cares about his promos, thinks about it obsessively. I get it. But I think there's a lot of people who are like, well, how can we make this funny? As opposed to how can we make this make sense? And I just, it frustrates me sometimes, Chris. I'm sorry, I've rambled.
No, I mean, I just want the shows to feel like shows rather yes. than, like, they don't.
Rather than paper cards or something.
The pay-per-views feel like overly long double albums that need to be squeezed down to a single album.
That's a great analogy.
Like every single time the pay-per-views feel like double albums that you can make a super edit to like one like 65, 70 minute single album that's good.
Is it Chicago 2 or Chicago 3, which is like four sides and like 8 hours? I'm like, what are you doing? It's like your second album.
Right? Like, come on, guys. Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness, where it's kind of like, I don't know, maybe squeeze this down all into one album or, you know.
We have the String Cheese Incident followed by Government Mule. We're going to get three songs in 12 hours. It's going to be fantastic, everybody.
And then Dynamite is a normal length album where every member of the band gets to write songs, like the Creedence Clearwater Revival album that they did.
Songs from the Pink House by the band or something like that, you know?
Yeah. Everybody gets to write their own song.
We're a collective. We don't have any. It's an artist collective.
Right. But yeah, it's that Creedence album where Fogerty doesn't write every song on the album. And the only songs that are any good at all are the Fogerty ones.
Yes. Yes. Okay. It's your turn for a song on here. Why? Well,
in that case, actually, with the Creedence thing, the band had a mutiny against John Fogerty where they were like, we need more democracy. And John was like, no, you need more practice.
No, that's true. I mean, yeah, there are guys who, you know less is more. And there are guys who are like, well, I'm just going to get my stuff in. Like,
so Brian Cage. It's
Brian Cage of wrestling. Yes.
Brian Cage versus Christian Cage.
Yes, no, that's a good point. Anything on NXT or the main roster or elsewhere in AEW you would like to get to right now? Because it is your turn and I've kept up enough of the time.
Yeah, for sure. Trick Williams, I mentioned this earlier, but I will just state again in watching this tag match this week, he's not there.
You told me this off air, so it's fine.
Yeah, okay, yeah, he's not there still. The moves and the offense are, you know, I'm thinking in my head immediately coming to mind is this neck breaker he went for that like just didn't quite cinch in, and like the trick shots, this like lame ass finisher that you give someone who you don't feel confident can hit a good finisher. It's the finish for guys who you don't think can do the RKO Stone Cold Stunner, has that prestige, boom zap sort of finish to it.
Now here's the problem with NXT. NXT takes these athletic dudes and just wants them to be gymnasts and high flyers, no matter their height, no matter their size. What we need to prove your athleticism here and do all these athletic drills, especially the women, is especially the gymnastic drills, but the men, they need punches, kicks, and headlocks.
Right. He
and
feels
just the
styleless.
Basics.
He has no style.
No, he has no, he doesn't have the building blocks. And it's just like, yeah, you have the knees and the high flying, and you are a big dude and you look jacked and you look great in the weight room.
But like his movement and stuff has no actual style to it. He's this theme song.
Yes.
And if without the theme song, if it was anything else in the ring, it's the way he hits the ropes. It's the way he throws the punches. Like, they don't actually sort of tell the story of a person. Stone Cold Steve Austin's punches looked like a reflection of the Stone Cold Steve Austin character.
Yes.
Like, yes, obviously they were not real punches. They're working punches. But they had this, like, I'm pissed, like, quality to them every time he hits you. And, like, The Rock, with that little hesitation every time he'd hit you, it was like he was doing a little shit-talking each time. Like, The Rock says, and then he hits you.
Yeah,
like,
Trick Williams is not an indie worker. We don't need to train him like an indie worker.
No, if anything, he needs more of, like, the signature kick style, the signature punch style.
Yes.
The signature basics.
He's a big guy who wears down his opponents and then hits them with the trick shot. That's all they need to do here. That's the story of Trick Williams. That's all you need. He's used to be Carmelo Hayes' heavy, and now he's a bodyguard who has turned wrestler, who's a big guy who can fight. I mean, that's what wrestling is a fight. It's not supposed to be – I don't want to say it's not supposed to be ballet, but, my God, it feels like they're trying to make him do ballet at times.
And they gotta give him something better than the trick shot. It's terrible. It has no build up to it. You can't really build up to it.
It's the rose plant of NXT finish.
Yeah, it's very, very it's very lame.
Go ahead, keep going, because all I have is Vader Club left.
Okay, all right. So, other things on NXT this week here. Just baffled by what we're doing with No Quarter Catch Crew. Like, I don't need Dark Knight of the Soul Charlie effing Dempsey. I need Charlie Dempsey to basically be telling the boys, look, they're running a mob family. We're a team. Like essentially, this is a great opportunity to turn the No Quarter Catch clause into like a thing where like these are a band of brothers. They're a band of brothers united by training and like a discipline and stuff versus a family that's united against crime.
This is
like,
so regal going to somebody and go, you know what? My kid's going to make it on the main roster. He needs to show some range.
Yes. No, like, yeah, right. I need him. I want him to be like both a little bit hammy and there's just a lot of crap going on here. All right. Other things. Lola Vice, I thought, had a nice week on the show here this week. I think that the match against Ariana Grace was good. I like the backstage promo and stuff, too. I mean, the match with Ariana Grace did most of the work there, but I just like Ariana's such a good little
flake. She's such a good flake. I know people like, oh, her comedy is so hammy and stupid, blah, blah, blah. I'm here for this. I want somebody like Lola Vice to run through her pretty much until she gets to that moment where you need to turn Ariana Grace babyface, and then she shows she's really competent underneath all the theatrics. I am fine with this. I'm actually, boy, there's part of me that, I mean, I go to Vegas this Monday night after that battleground. I'm thinking about maybe changing my flight and hitting that because I'm kind of here for the blood sport match with Shayna and Lola Vice. I mean, that sounds like a hoot and a hollering to me.
Yeah, Lola does keep improving. The offense keeps looking better and better. I think, and they're making fewer confusing steps with her characterization. She's becoming more and more kind of decidedly a baby face or whatever. Don't know what the Dante Chen Lexus King thing, like what the hell are we doing
Lexus
here?
Lexus King to TNA. Like, and I think he might get a few wins and a few losses, get the seasoning he needs. I like Pillman Jr. I don't understand what they're doing with him now.
I don't either. I thought I understood it.
I did too.
And now I really don't.
And touching Chen to me is useless, to be honest.
He is like the sexy red of wrestling. I just don't see it with this guy. I'm trying.
Who's the Maroon 5 of wrestling to you there?
The Maroon 5 of wrestling. Dolph Ziggler.
Okay. Actually, that's not bad. That's not bad at all because it's like a lot of hits. You didn't realize it, and they're perfectly good. But it's also kind of the same. Yeah.
It's also kind of the same song every time too.
God, you nailed that one. Now you need to apologize to me for stepping on your joke because that was fantastic. That was awesome. Should we get to Vader Club this week?
Yeah. All right. I'll do the
please
setup
intro.
For this.
Yes.
Okay. So like I was going through a playlist of Scott Norton matches and just kind of like clicking through and like all of a sudden I saw Scott Norton versus Chris Benoit on Thunder 98. I was intrigued. Even though it was short, my presumption going into the match was that Benoit was going to basically make short work of Scott Norton. So it was kind of like, why is this on the playlist or whatever? No. Instead, it is essentially just 5 minutes of Scott Norton doing diesel offense on Chris Benoit, where it's like a 90-10 match where Norton gets all of this thing. And he, every single move Scott Norton does to Benoit looks like death, dude. Like there's not a thing that he does. The only thing that didn't look rough was the I'm bumping you into the steel pole on the outside of the ring spot. But like the gorilla press slam, the elbow drops, the splashes into the corner, every bit of Scott Norton's offense here in this match looks brutal.
I love Chris Benoit, or he who shall not be named, as a wrestler. I couldn't get over the fact that this was the setup for Benoit versus Booker T at Spring Stampede on that Sunday. Chris Benoit may finally win a title. He's getting his ass beat by Scott Steiner.
Scott Norton.
Scott Norton, sorry.
Yeah, 95-5, and Norton's no-selling the Benoit chops.
Yes, that was pure, okay. But if there's a guy you want to no-sell an occasional chop, it's Scott Norton.
I was
cool with that, but Benoit sells his ass off for everything that Norton does, and it looks like it's hurting, which is what I like, which if they did this today, Benoit would be standing there and taking it, you know, oh, this is awesome, strong style, whatever. And of course, all commentary can do is talk about how the Steiners will be on opposite sides as, who is it, Luger and Rick versus Scott Steiner and
it's so quintessentially WCW to not be calling the fucking or the action in the ring. Like, I mean, what a great opportunity to put over Scott Norton. I mean, why is this match happening like this is a completely different question. But like, suppose Benoit was not in a title match on Sunday, and this should be an obvious
Benoit doesn't want any help. He just got his butt kicked by two guys out there. This is everything I complain about stupid baby faces.
Why would he not want help after an idiot like Vincent can cost him the match?
UVA's own Vincent, Mike Jones. And Benoit, dude, if you could, number one, this had to be early on Thunder. If Mike Tenay and Bobby Heenan are still doing it, I never watched Thunder. To be honest with you.
Oh, I did. I watched the very first episode.
I watched all my WCW. And I checked out. I just went the hell with this. I'm going to Thursday was actually a big open mic night for me back then. So I would be traveling amongst Los Angeles, hidden comedy open mics at night during this time. So I never sat down. And that's why I wanted to listen to Days of Thunder occasionally. So I see what I didn't miss. But Benoit looks like he has the Sasha Banks boo-boo face. Going into this, no real interest in being in this company anymore for the most part to me. I don't know. Still has a year left because he's teaming with Malenko the next year and at that Spring Stampede. But every chop he throws, every punch he throws in his entire, every kick, Benoit just throws his entire body into it. Like, he looks like he's trying to beat you up. And I adore that out of him. Yes, he killed his wife and son. Moving on.
No, like, I mean, this is notably, too. It's the reason I almost didn't do it, because I was like, I don't want to do Benoit. But yeah. I'm like, look, I think at a certain point, like, dude, we can watch a five-minute match where, honestly, the spotlight here is more on Scott Norton than it
is
on
Benoit. I think most wrestlers are bad people, so I'm fine.
Well, and I to me, I'm like, I'm not even spotlighting Benoit in this. I was actually spotlighting Norton's offense.
Yes,
Norton's offense, like, I want to circle back. Why did I ultimately settle in on this? Like, oh, this is a good example of, like, a thing I do, like, want to talk about. Is it, like, Scott Norton in this otherwise piece of crap match is actually dropping in all of this very, very yes. excellent looking offense. It's all top notch textbook stuff, right up to the big gorilla press slam. That
His
looks awesome.
Lines
oh my God.
Friggin' brutal. It looks like to take. Cause look, both Benoit and Norton will take your shots. Norton's a guy who, you know, it's like when he came into WCW, I had known his reputation from Japan, from Rec Sport Pro Wrestling. And I was hyped, and he looked like a guy, and they'd push him a little bit, and then they cool him off, and then they'd look like they were going to reload and do something with him, and then they cool him off again, and then they cool him off again, and then they cool him off again. And I'm just like, somewhere in the back, he has to be thinking, Vince McMahon would have done something with me for at least a major title run or something, because I'm a big guy. I mean, he's a big dude with charisma who could talk. He had legitimate toughness. And I just, that was one of those things where it's like, that's a WCW 92 guy right there.
He oh,
was
God.
Just 5 years too late.
Right? No, like, if Norton had been in there at the same time as Vader, there's like a lost WCW pay-per-view in a
yes.
parallel timeline where that's the main event, and it's just like one of those sleeper main events that we're talking about for years.
Or he is Vader if Vader never shows up.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, yeah, no, I thank you. I mean, this is only 6 minutes. You can find it on YouTube. This is a definition of a Russo match in some
right,
way.
Yeah. At once, it is nothing to write home about, but then also I would beg you to just stop and actually watch the work itself that's going on in
yes.
this match, and you'll see, like, oh, yeah, I would like a little bit more of this in my TV, I think.
It's like what a real fight would be if it was in a wrestling ring in some ways, because it's like, yeah, I don't want 20-minute, you know, arcing things. Sometimes I just want to watch two guys beat the crap out of each other for 6 minutes and somebody gets a pin. I'm cool with that, man. No, I really like this. I'll pick a match for next week, send it to you sometime after the weekend. Let's end it there, shall we?
Sounds
High
good.
Note. It's been Shake Them Rosie, and follow me at CrapGame13 on Elon Musk's lovely X. You can follow the show also on at Shake Them Ropes, all one word. I only update that with retweeting Voices of Wrestling, putting out our stuff. Chris is only on Instagram, showing pictures of him playing at a tram and whatnot. He is at DOCTOR_NOV. We are, again, part of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Shows for all of your various interests, including The Good, The Bad, The Hungry, our AEW-centric show. Days of Thunder, a rewind show. Please, if you liked Thunder, go back and listen to those, because they go week by week. And, of course, The Flagship with Joe and Rich. I am also on Fight Game Media. I do the Dynamite show about 20 minutes after Dynamite. We go live on YouTube, myself and Mr. Paul Fontaine of WrestlingObserver.com. Thoroughly deconstruct all things AEW. Will drop on your audio podcatchers the next morning. Chris also does things. I'm not going to take up all the plug time. Let's hear from him now.
Oh yeah, I'm teaching lessons. You can find me on Instagram, DOCTOR_NOV. It's getting late. I'm going to go to bed here. If you want lessons, hit me up. Otherwise, you know, keep on dreaming those dreams.
No.
And there is no mountain too high for you to climb if you put your mind to it.
Tram stamp.
Tram.
Hey, everybody. My name is Jesse Collings, and I want to tell you all about my show, the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. On the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, we do a thorough analysis on the biggest issues and trends within the pro wrestling industry. We talk a lot about pro wrestling media. We talk a lot about fan culture and wrestling's place within general pop culture, and we talk about the broader influences that are shaping the way we discuss and analyze the pro wrestling industry. We've had some of the brightest minds in the pro wrestling intelligentsia on the show, including WrestleNomics host Brandon Thurston, both Rich Kreich and Joe Lanza from the Flagship Wrestling Podcast, Trevor Dame from the Through the Years podcast, and a whole lot more. This isn't a show for hot takes. It's not a show recapping the latest episode of television. This is a show focusing on the biggest topics in pro wrestling and doing a deep dive on the real stories behind the surface level analysis you might find elsewhere. The Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, and we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a try. Thanks.